Who's doing the intro? Would that be you, Steve Miller? All right, I'll do it.
Woo!
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I will be.
Castle with Maxine. Maybe I'll be happy if I shoot my band.
Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Steve Miller? Is it working? Can you feel it?
I can feel it. It's working.
Yeah.
Tasty, yet toasty.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So this is Mr. Michael Dean. I'm talking with Mr. Steve Miller. And this is the Freedom Fiends playing on your radio, in your head, and broadcasting. I can hear everything you're typing, whatever it is, on that computer. I still think that mic's on. So we're broadcasting into space through that's really why we do this. We care about the listeners here on Earth, but really this is for the aliens in Alpha Centauri 4.3 light years away. And you know, we keep talking and hoping they'll hear us and come here and give us their state busting software and technology to put a big dome over us. So when people say, if you don't like government, move to Somalia, we can just put a force field over us and say, nah, I like it where I am, but I don't like you, so I'm just gonna stay. That's the plan.
Bad news is that it'll be written in math.
Math or written in meth? I feel like I'm on meth, but I'm not. Because I'm on sleep, which is a weird drug for me. It's a hell of a drug. I have been dealing with a lot of health issues, and I'm still dealing with a lot of them, and people know about it. But I have been on a CPAP / SVT, servo ventilation, auto SVT machine for the past like 10 nights. And, like, I've slept well. I haven't slept 10 nights well in, like, 20 years, man. It's weird. I've been dealing with sleep apnea, and I think a lot of people have it. It basically means you stop breathing many times a night during your sleep. And I stopped breathing 145 times an hour, my sleep study said. And now on this device, I stopped breathing, like, 1.6 times per hour. So that is a vast improvement.
Nice.
Yeah. It actually has
way
like
better.
It actually has like it logs all the events, and there's like software like it records everything to an SD card. To read the SD card requires proprietary software that costs a lot of money, but there's a programmer who has sleep apnea who like jailbroke it and wrote freeware that reads the software and produces graphs and stuff that are useful. And that's pretty cool. It's called, you'd find them at sleepfiles.com. It's a good site. Sleepfiles.com. You can get the software. It's called Sleepyhead. It's open source free software for reading CPAP machine SD cards. And their motto is a sheep with a little mask on his face. And I don't think that's implying that people who have sleep apnea are sheepish. I think it means, you know, counting sheep, like you can actually sleep. So
is it a V for Vendetta mask the sheep is wearing?
No, it's a normal oxygen mask, but it should be. I'm gonna get back in shape and look like Bane when this is all done. So yeah, man, I'm pretty hopeful about life. And you got a comment, sir? Go ahead.
Maybe you could join me as a trans libertarian, somebody who has the body of a normal, fit human being, but mentally they still feel like they're a libertarian.
So that's implying that libertarians are out of shape, right? Is that the joke?
And have a neck beard. Yes, you have to get rid of your neck beard.
I've never had a neck beard. I've never. I grew facial hair once in my life and then shaved it off. I often need a shave, but I don't. I'm not a very hairy guy. And my hair is blonde on my face, so it blends in. Like, basically, I have to not shave for 2 or 3 weeks before you look at me from more than 5 feet away and go, wow, you kind of need to shave, man. But actually, I'm having to shave, like, every 3 days now, which is like a normal man shaving every one day. Because I don't grow that much hairy. I'm a hairless middle-aged man. So, but I have a full head of hair on my head that's very slowly going away, which is good. And Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist, and his feet stink. And Hillary Clinton is a liar, a socialist, and her pantsuit stinks. I want to get that out of the way. But and I'm going to turn this all over to Steve in a minute here because we've got big plans to talk about. But what did you want? What did you want about my beard? Oh, okay. So it's weird having oxygen in my brain. Who are you and what am I doing here? It's weird having oxygen in my brain. I'm not used to it and it's kind of confusing, but I'm brimming with ideas. So basically I'm having to shave more often because if you don't shave, the CPAP mask doesn't really fit over your face and it blows air up into your eyes, which wakes you up. So, and you know, like that's why Hitler had that weird mustache was so it would fit in a gas mask. Do you know that?
Really?
Yeah.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah, a lot of Nazis followed that too because he was the style, but also because it'll fit in a gas mask. So, over to you, Miller. You want to talk about some concept about comedians? We like comedians. You're a comedian. Man, I could just hear that pounding away. What's up with that?
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
So shifting gears here from software and sleepwear and the fact that sleep is a hell of a drug and my brain doesn't even know what to do having enough oxygen. And I've been like struggling along basically with the equivalent of breathing through a straw for a year and like not breathing to my full potential for 10 years or more probably. And sleep apnea is a hell of a problem in America and the world. And there's a lot of it undiagnosed. And I don't give medical advice, but if you have a lot of medical problems and you don't know what they are, get a sleep study or at least like ask your sleep partner or roommate if you, during your sleep, when you're snoring or even when you're not, if you ever just stop breathing. And that's sleep apnea, you know? Yeah.
This is why you're a more humble person than Jim Babb.
Why?
Because Jim Babb, he has no doctor in anything. He has no formal training in anything. And he's just like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely give you advice for all your life situations. Yeah. Unqualified, not certified to give it, not, you know.
Well, I'm not certified by anything except experience to give it. And Jim's pretty polite with me about things.
You need word from an authority.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've actually had word from a bunch of authorities. The process of getting an insurance company to cover equipment for sleep apnea. I mean, this machine that I have is worth $3,500, and they're basically giving it to me for the rest of my life. I'm paying like $450 a month for health insurance, so I'm getting the better end of the deal. So you can be damn sure they made sure that authorities confirmed that yes, I did have it. So anyway, moving from sleep and software and apnea and lack of sleep and what it's like to not have lack of sleep suddenly to something really cool here I want to talk about is comedians. Now, you are a stand-up comedian. You're a stand-up guy and a comedian, right, Steve Miller? Would you say that's
indeed
true?
Both. Yeah. I fail more at the former than the latter, but yes.
You fail more at being a stand-up human being or a stand-up comic?
Well, more being a comic than being a stand-up guy. Okay. I like to think that I'm a stand-up guy, but you know, you have your off nights on stage. But okay. I like to think that I bomb less on stage than at Morality.
Okay.
I'll put it that way.
Cool, man. So there's this article. Boy, this is a complicated intro for this, but it's an interesting thing to talk about. There's this guy named Chris Cantwell. He thinks he's a comedian. Do you know? He's somebody in Liberty.
Yes, Chris Friedman.
Oh, he had a different name?
Yeah, he had a stage name, Chris Friedman. And first of all, really, really creative. Totally unoriginal, never been done before.
Yeah.
Really breaking new edgelord. And then he basically went on as an edgelord and he quit comedy very, very rapidly.
What is an edgelord?
And I watched this.
That's somebody who like
I love
in, right?
Compulsively. Like they, you know, if they see a picture of a baby, they're like, oh, I hope that baby gets raped or whatever.
Yeah, okay. They say the worst things they can say. It's an edgelord. All right. And you said you love what? What do you love?
I love watching young aspiring edgelord, especially comedians. Love watching their comedy dreams go up in flames.
He's
usually
not that
at
young.
An open mic.
He's not that young. He's 33
something. But normally the people that do this are fairly young.
Well, he's been doing it a while too. I think he's been trying to make a name for himself in different things, throwing grease at the wall and see what's going to stick for like at least 10 years. Like he was running for office in the Libertarian Party like 10 years ago and getting kicked out of the party.
Running for orifice. Am I right?
Yeah, I think so. Yep. Yep.
But his comedy dreams were failing. And I knew as soon as he announced that he was going to start doing stand-up comedy, I'm like, oh man, this can only end badly. Because in New Hampshire, like the nearest city with a big comedy scene would be Boston. And that's like a really tough comedy scene. First of all, there's a lot of really funny people.
You know who the last good comic from New Hampshire was? G.G. Allen.
I thought you were going to say Franklin Pierce.
I don't know who that is.
But
nope.
He was president. But
But
here's the one thing in a rough comedy scene, and I would say Philly has one too, as well as Boston. The one thing you absolutely cannot do is talk about how hard you work when you never get any funnier, and then they also hate it when comedians live off the donations of others. When you're like, oh, you need to fund my, because improv people do that, and
Mark Maron
if you
does
do
that.
Anything that identifies yourself.
Mark Maron takes
Mark
podcasts.
Mark Maron does that, but
he also like has jobs where he makes lots of money. So
there you go.
Yeah,
he can also do a show and sell it out. And,
yeah,
you know what have yeah. you? He's not chronically unemployable, living in my sorry excuse for a studio here in Keene, New Hampshire.
Although I do want to talk about him later and how brilliant. I really like him. Do you like him? Are you a fan, Mark Maron?
Chris Cantwell, not at all.
Mark Maron.
Oh, Mark Maron. Yeah, Mark Maron, I'm a fan. Chris Cantwell.
I'm not talking about Chris Cantwell. No. So Mark Maron is funny as heck. And I binge watched all 13 episodes of season 3 of his show Maron last night. And he just gets better and better. And I really kind of relate with him because he's like, we have a lot in common. I mean, he's way more successful than I am at anything. But he's like 51. I'm 51. He's bitter. He's a cat guy. He's a podcaster. He's in recovery, you know. I mean, he has a lot in common with me of, you know, for me to look at someone and go, oh, that could be a role model. But, he did a few episodes written by Jerry Stahl, who's a dude I like and know, and he's in my Selby movie. And the last episode of this season that Jerry Stahl wrote and Maron is in, the one where he relapses on drugs, is amazing.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom nice. Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Fiends.
Freedom Fiends.
So, Steve Villanueva, why do you like the fact? Why do you like the fact that there are 8 segments in a Freedom Fiends radio show?
Well, first of all, I don't know why it took me too long to realize this, but there's exactly 8 segments in every Freedom Fiends episode, and that makes it like a boxing match, except they're not all the same length. But it's you, me, and then, you know, occasionally joined by some other people. And that's just sheer pugilism with the state.
Yeah. It's you know, did you know that the term octagon for the ring for MMA is a trademark term for like whatever administration runs the MMA shows on TV? That's kind of weird.
The MMAA?
Yeah. Is that what they are?
No, that would be
it.
Great, though.
It is funny.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
and I know that because CJ Punk was on a couple episodes of Mark Maron's show, which I was just talking about, and I went falling down wormholes on the internet. So Maron is this dude I really like, and he's a comedian that he's not for everybody, for sure. He's, as he said in one of his own stand-up things, he said, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but something like, I don't know that I'm funny. I think I'm compelling, but you know, I don't think when people come see me, I don't think they go, wow, that was really funny. I think they go, I hope that guy's going to be all right. Which is, you know, kind of his humor is kind of smart, but it's kind of street and it's very in your face and very real, but not edgelord for the sake of edgelord ever, but can go to some really dark places. And the last episode of last season of his stuff, Maron, where he relapses, it is a drug movie almost of the caliber of Requiem for a Dream or The Panic
in Chris Cantwell's Instagram videos.
Needle Park or Chris Cantwell's Instagram videos. Yeah. But it's different because those are all people who, like, you know, their hitting bottom is like them prostituting themselves homeless on the street. Whereas there are other kinds of bottoms. And I went to AA in LA long enough to hear a lot of people talk about this kind of bottoms. Like I remember sitting in a meeting in LA where there was this screenwriter who said, I just found out that the IRS is that I owe back taxes and the IRS, and I'm sober, but I don't know how to deal with life on life's terms that well. And I'm really upset that the IRS is going to be taking a quarter of my annual income for the next 3 years. I mean, they're going to be taking $80,000 a year from me for the next 3 years. And I'm like sitting there like counting pennies to see if I have enough like money to get gas back to my house after the meeting. And this guy's 860-30. I'm doing the math. He's like making $320,000 a year and complaining that he's losing a quarter of it, you know, to taxes, which is, you know, a real thing, but, and then the government blows and they're thieves. But, you know, that's the kind of like bot. And Mark Maron's like, I don't know if he really relapsed or not. I don't think he did. I mean, he didn't in this, he's acting in this. I don't think it's based on real life experience. I think it might be based on maybe Jerry Stahl's real life experience or Jerry Stahl, like before he got sober or something. You know, I don't know how many times he tried. I don't know how many, you know, everybody tries a few times, like, but he was like working in Hollywood, writing on ALF, making a bunch of money and still doing heroin and hitting bottom. And that's where Permanent Midnight came from. But, Mark Maron in this is like hitting bottom, like, you know, in his $1 million house, you know, it's not the, I ended up penniless, you know, pulling needles out of the gutter and sticking in my arm bottom. It's the, you know, I blew it on my pilot of my, you know, I finally got my show and then blew it and yelled at everybody and lost the show after the pilot. So it's that kind of bottom, but it's as real and it can be as devastating. And the really clever thing that I realized after like watching this season in one sitting and then watching this last episode 3 times was they kind of set it up as a character arc. Like Jerry Stahl wrote a couple episodes earlier in the season and they kind of set up like Maron kind of turning into an ass, like, which is what people do before they relapse. A lot of times, you know, they quit being grateful and they quit like being happy with what they have and working on self-improvement and just start taking everything for granted and screaming at people. And they set that up really cleverly and subtly in some other episodes in it. But I don't know, man. Maron just really tickles my feathers and makes my ape in my brain happy. Do you want to share some experiences you've had with Maron?
Do you show me in the heart where Mark Maron touched you?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're going to get back to Cantwell unless you have some Maron advice or Maron experience, strength, and hope.
No, I would just say that I purchased Mark Maron's app and then later deleted it to have room for Grindr and memes, because that's where the memory on my phone gets devoted. And I apologize to Mark Maron, but I'm sorry. You're never going to like take the space in my heart that Grindr and memes has.
I don't really understand the like an app for everything. I have a browser. Why don't I go through the browser? But I mean, there's kids that don't even know what the internet is that are on it constantly now because they go through apps.
I don't have apps, but I have a multitude of memes.
Yeah, there you go. We'll be back after this trip to the market on the Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Ding. 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 Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com. Ding. Next round. Ding, ding. Are you ready for further abuse, Steve Miller?
Yeah, I liked how in between rounds, the ring girls came out and offered everybody in the crowd bigger buttons.
Yeah, everyone missed that at home. So we're talking about comedians and comedians who fail. And, you know, Chris Cantwell has broken the two cardinal rules of comedians. We've talked about this before. He's not funny and he steals jokes. Those are the two worst things a comic can do. And he's stolen jokes from me. The joke he stole from me.
Not being funny is not even that bad.
Yeah. Stealing a joke is worse. Especially doing it like, you know, knowingly. And he did it knowingly. Basically the joke was, I made his name a cuss word. Like for like a year on this show, if anybody said this word, has said his name, I hit the cuss dump. I treated it like the F word. I treated it like it was FCC non-compliant and would make a point of it. Like, well, you just said, and we called him he who cannot be named after Voldemort.
I remember that.
And after a while we got sick of it and just started naming him. Don't say his name. No, we'd say his name. But yeah, man, that was my joke. So MK Lords, who was a Fiend co-host at the time, this is like six months ago, she called into Free Talk, like he'd said something bad about her because she'd written something bad about him. She'd called him a libertarian welfare queen, which is a great term that she coined for everyone except me who begs for a living, you know, along with their Liberty Media. I'm different because a whole bunch of reasons we could go into. I'm a good guy. Other people aren't. Well, really, like, you know, there's only three people she called. She used that name on Cantwell, Kokesh, and Molyneux.
Molly. Yeah.
Yeah. And Kokesh, I like. He just is really sloppy with money that he, you know, like, I don't even think he's immoral. I just think, who the hell would give that guy money? Like, first of all, you know, his dad is a multimillionaire. Second of all, he's on a pension from the government already. And third of all, like, you know, he'll raise like $20,000 for something and then people steal it. And then he'll raise another $20,000. Like I wouldn't give someone $20,000 who gets it, who says they got it ripped off, you know? And then I certainly,
we don't know that he actually raised that money.
Okay. Didn't he say he did?
Yeah, there's a potential that this could be like similar to buying likes on Facebook, because you're not likely to donate to something if nobody's given money to it.
Right.
But if you think that $10,000 has already been donated and none of this has ever been verified by other.
Yeah.
Like he said he was going to open up the books when he got out of jail, and that never happened.
Yeah.
So we have no idea how much of money existed anywhere.
Yeah.
Ever. But there's all these questions that have been answered. And to this day, he'll blow them off if anyone asks. Go give it a try.
And I'll answer those questions if asked. And it basically, like, you know, it turns down to like, in donations, I bring in like 1/500th of what Molyneux does, 1/20th of what Kokesh says he does. And I spend most of it on expenses for the show and for things like buying people microphones and buying equipment, giving equipment away to other podcasters. And, you know, I end up making like, I don't know, pennies an hour for doing the show, but I do it full time. It takes full time to do it. So anyway, yeah, she called him a libertarian welfare queen, and he got mad, but he wouldn't say her name. He started treating her name
I would call her butthurt.
Yeah, stole my joke.
I would diagnose his condition as acute butthurt.
He stole my joke in that he started treating her name like a cuss word. Now, just not acknowledging her name isn't really stealing my joke. Like in an article saying, I don't want to give her a link, but some libertarian woman wrote this article about me that said bad things, you know. But then she called into Free Talk Live when he was a co-host on it, and like he wouldn't talk to her. Like Ian and Mark are talking to her about Cantwell. He's in the room and he's like, la 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 la, I don't hear you. And then he's like, I'm not going to talk to her. If she hangs up, we'll talk about her, but I'm not going to talk to her, which really is very just bizarrely immature for such a like confrontational guy who, you know, gets up in people's face and threatens to spray with bear mace. You know, some like 98 pounds soaking wet girl calls up and he goes, I'm going to run in my corner and hide, you know? So he did that, and then she got off the phone, and then he talked about her a whole bunch, and then he put the video up on YouTube of him talking about her for like 5 minutes, but beeped out her name every time it came up, like it was a cuss word. So that's stealing my joke, and then he's also not funny. So what do you, as a comedian, yeah, what do you say, man?
Well, okay, so I knew his jokes were going to be terrible. Unfortunately, he didn't put up a bunch of things on YouTube, because one thing that awful comics will do is sometimes they'll be like, you know what, maybe the crowd didn't like this, but I'm going to put it up on YouTube anyway, which you shouldn't do. If you're a young comic listening to this, don't put footage of you bombing on YouTube, because people like me who get sick pleasure out of it will watch it and we will love it. Relish it. Bring popcorn, bring your Michael Jackson costume, everything. So he never had footage of him actually bombing, but I've heard him bomb on the air repeatedly. It's not difficult, but
it's not what?
So it goes. It's not difficult to bomb on a show.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many times have I bombed with, you know, here on the old Fiends, but nah. I don't, you know,
You don't make clips of it. You don't make a clip show of it.
I've bombed rounds, but I haven't bombed the entire fight. I lose rounds. I don't lose fights as a comic.
Yep.
You know,
cool.
Sometimes you lose rounds. No big deal. But that's what good comics do. Bad comics, you know, are bad comics. The end. You know, they go. They ask for donations. And then they live off of those, because being a comedian is your career. And I hate it when people say, it's my career. I'm a businessman, man. I'm going to go to Delaware and incorporate my comedy open mic. That happens.
Well,
Cantwell strikes me as the kind of dude who would like fill his head with ideas about how his comedy corporation is going to change the face of comedy, because they're going to charge for God knows. And then, And then it just piles into the ground. He loses all of his friends. I could see that happening. 100%.
Yeah.
It's normally dudes like with that body type and with that attitude also.
Yeah. I've said several times that I think he's a really good writer, which people who don't like him get upset when I say that. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, it's because I don't think he's a good writer.
Well, I think he's a technically good writer. But he doesn't have an original idea in his head. And like, he's a technical good writer in that there are no typos and it's grammatically correct, which is more than I can say of 99% of bloggers. So that there kind of impresses me.
Definitely.
That impresses me to the point where I have had the theory that he is a government plant and actually a committee of people in a government office, because my diagnostic, you know, like fingerprint analysis, a handwriting analysis, contextual analysis of what he writes says that it's not the same person that's on the Instagram videos of him screaming drunkenly at people, that can't possibly be the same person, but it might be. But he, like, even when he writes a really good article like this one that I kind of wanted to talk about, you know, it's based on two ideas that I've not seen really discussed together, but they're two ideas that aren't his, and he acknowledges that they're not his. But, you know, one is the...
He wasn't the first person to burn a cross.
Yeah, oh, man. Yeah, he has gone, like, kind of full-on racist or, you know, white is right, which is really bizarre, man.
Yeah.
White national. Yeah. And he wrote an article recently about like the failure of libertarianism. Did you see that one? Did you read that at all?
Also called libertarianism.
What do you mean?
I mean, you never win. Like that's part of the deal.
Yeah.
Is that you're always fighting the good fight, but you like the victories you win are like minor, you know, side skirmishes, you know, on the big questions, you know.
Well, he wrote one called Why Libertarians Are Hopeless.
Always lose.
He wrote one called Why Libertarians Are Hopeless. And it's him explaining why he's now a self-described fascist backing Trump, which is like, you know, I mean, even if you decide that, like, well, I don't like open borders and I think we need to, you know, I think I need, you know, my problem with him that he ever called himself a libertarian, that he's going to these places, isn't so much that he's entertaining ideas like maybe not everyone who wants to get into America should get into America until, you know, until the government disappears. Like that's kind of a thing. And I've argued against that, saying, no, to really be consistent, you have to say, I don't care. Open borders are a sin in liberty. Yeah. You just have to let people come. And, you know, but that does deal with like bringing in, like, there's the argument of like, okay, if you're going to bring in a bunch of Syrian refugees, a lot of them are Muslim, you know, when people are saying that it's like that when you're comparing Trump to Hitler, because Trump is talking about not letting in a bunch of Muslims and Hitler killed a bunch of Jews, it's not really the same thing. It could be argued if you put on your like minarchist conservative hat for a minute, because you could say, well, you know, okay, Jesus was the Prince of Peace, and you know, Muhammad was a war leader, you know, who conquered nations, conquered other, you know, lived like someone who didn't believe in the non-aggression principle and didn't believe in the golden rule. You could say, well, that's not the same thing. And like none of those Jews were murdering Germans in the name of their religion, the way a very few amount of Muslims are. Like you kind of sound like a liberal hippie with blinders on his eyes when you say things like I say, like, hey man, you just got to let everybody in. And I can see the argument for, you know, kind of harder edged libertarians like Cantwell, or people who think they're harder edged libertarians like Cantwell. Sorry. Yeah. Like, you know, people with a hard libertarian is hard to find, who saying things like, hang on.
Hard in the head.
Yeah. Harder head libertarians saying things like that. I can see that. I don't agree with it. I can see it, but I can't see taking it to the collectivism of Trump will save us. That's just insane to me. And I can't tell if Cantwell is doing it as a joke or real. And this is something I want to talk about his article, but I also want to talk about and you have a lot to say on this, the problem of comedians who say absurd and wrong things and then say, oh, I was just playing. That's a persona. That's not me. That's my Andy Kaufman, you know? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to go to the break here pretty quick, but go ahead real quick.
Yeah. No, I will discuss all these things and I will discuss them all when we come back from Yonder Market, and we're going to pregame for this break really hard ding, until ding. The music comes in. Ding, ding.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the lizard brain, the three brain theory, which has been discredited, but Cantwell likes it. And
open my comic brain.
Yeah. And RNK selection theory.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Sure.
Michael Dean, talking to Steve Miller, and we're talking about comedians that are horrible, and then try to explain it away by saying it's a persona. And it's kind of a common thing. And it's either when it happens when comedians are horrible and bomb. It also happens when comedians say horrible things. And like, there's this guy, Gavin Innes, I think is his name, who runs Vice magazine, who's kind of like, I think this is who Cantwell's trying to imitate, who's a lot more successful, but he's a guy who's called himself a libertarian for at least 10 years, who suddenly is sounding really neocon, really backing Trump, really hate the Muslims, really, like your drunk uncle, but saying he's still a libertarian and speaking collectively for libertarians and explaining it when he is pinned down. In an interview, he will often say, oh, that's just a persona, man. I'm still really a libertarian. I'm not that conservative guy. But it's hard to tell because these people get less and less funny when they do this kind of stuff. So let's do this last segment of this hour before we get into the next hour here with Steve Miller-Miller talking about his experience, strength, and hope and despisement of that kind of comedian and that action.
Your speaker today is Steve. Steve will speak to us on the topic of open mic comedians.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve. I've been a jokeaholic for about 8 years now. And I started off as a Christian comedian, and that whetted my appetite. And when I was a Christian comedian, I was just starting off in comedy. And what I would do when I would bomb doing Christian comedy is, or when anyone bombs doing Christian comedy, what you do is then you go immediately right to heartfelt. You tell your personal story, you embellish some things, you make things up, but man, oh man, you pull those heartstrings, because no one's going to walk away and be like, you know, man, he really touched my heart, but man, he wasn't funny at all. They're just going to remember that part. So that is what I would do every single time. And I would throw in the towel really early sometimes. I'd start like one or two jokes wouldn't go my way. And I'd be like, you know what? They paid me in cash at this Christian camp. So you know what I'm going to do? Take it right to heartfelt. Go to a story about, you know, whatever. And that would be how I handled things. Then I went into what we might call real comedy, secular comedy, where your jokes can curse, where you can curse and you can talk about things and you can drink fetuses on stage and what have you.
What?
Bite the heads off it. Yeah, there was a comedian when I first started out whose gig was he had this little like clay fetus that he would keep in a jar with like cherry Kool-Aid, and he would pretend to drink the like blood from around the fetus. And this was his big closer,
Edgelord,
that he would do. Yeah. Oh, total Edgelord. And he vanquished me in the Philly's Dirtiest Comedian competition back in 2010. Same dude. Greg Lynn. Greg, if you're listening, love you. You're a good man. Hope you're selling a lot of hot sauce. Greg owns a hot sauce company now, which might be a good avenue for Cantwell to parlay his podcast into. You know, say, I'm so white hot mad about there being blacks in my country. Here's a white hot sauce. To deal with your anger as a white person. White pepper, white supremacy sauce, you might be able to go with. There's a lot of directions you could go with. But yeah, Chris, if you're listening, maybe look into the hot sauce business. But people will explain away bombing all the time. And one of the most common excuses they'll give, as you mentioned, is, oh, I was playing a character. And there is nothing worse. I've seen so many dudes who were, you know, playing themselves on stage, basically saying how they feel, saying things that they'd posted on Facebook as themselves, because what is comedy in 2015 but going on stage and reading your Twitter feed to everybody assembled? And so these were things that they clearly meant, and then people in the crowd, and it would just be an all-you-can-eat buffet.
People in the crowd would what? I'm sorry, I lost you there for a minute.
People in the crowd would get all mad, and then it was an all-you-can-eat buffet of, oh, I'm a comedian, I was just playing a character, blah 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 blah, when really, no, you're terrible, you just bombed, no big deal, and you know, you can move on, you can always move on. But bombers are oftentimes very hard-headed, and they get attached to their crappy jokes or their crappy lifestyles in the case of Cantwell. But yeah, you get really attached to it, and and it's hard to give up your jokes. They're like your children, and some of them just need to be aborted.
Wow.
And some of them need to be the fetus you drink on stage. Like that's the fake fetus you drink on stage.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, your jokes are your fake children.
Louis
so yeah,
C.K.
make them the fake fetus that you drink.
Louis C.K. says he in an interview with Maron on Maron's podcast said that Louis C.K. like destroys all his jokes once a year, like figuratively burns them, and literally like will try to never do any of them. Like, he'll apologize if he finds himself doing one again in a stand-up later. That's pretty, that takes a lot, but, you know, it's hard to write an hour of comedy. I can see why people would want to keep it around for more than years, but, yeah. Doug Stanhope has that bit about making fun about rock lyrics, how they just repeat, and he has to actually write every word. Worms, 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 worms.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibBear 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. I am your host, Mr. Michael W. Dean. Your other host today is Mr. Steve Miller Miller. Are you there, Steve?
Indeed, I am.
Yes, he's on satellite feed from Somalia, so there's a little bit of a delay. We had to, you know, he just didn't love his government.
Mogadishu, you were here.
He didn't love his government, so we made him go to Somalia. All right, so the topic, well, what did you say right before we came on? That was a good one. I like that. Barack Obama's a liar, socialist, and his feet stink, but go on.
Yeah, well, what I said was that Hillary Clinton is a liar, a socialist, and her pantsuit stinks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after I explained that, what I explained was, you came back on the line, you went to the bathroom, and then I said, what's up, my Yak Pharma?
Yeah.
And you like that. Yeah.
That's
we were talking squad goals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm calling them squawk goals. That's my new hashtag, because we squawk on the radio, but squad goals is a hashtag on the Twitters. You know, I watched well, we're trying to make some memes here, and we like memes, juicy, dank memes, audio memes, as well as visual memes. And one of your new memes is the idea that yak farmer should become a dirty word for anarcho-libertarian capitalist types. You know, like, we could say it, like, hey, what's up, my yak farmer? But probably not on radio someday, but definitely, like, if you're not one, you can't say it, kind of thing. And it's because we have a friend named Young Nick, you know, Nick Hazelton, who's 17 years old. He's one of our co-hosts. He's our youngest co-host. And he's a yak farmer, literally. You can go to an-yak.com and hear his podcast and see his yaks. And I built that. I mean, he built himself, but I, you know, kind of mentored him along the way. I said, hello, young boy, would you like some mentoring? And, you know, bought him a microphone, and it wasn't dirty like it sounds. It was very clean. And I, like, his dad knows it's me. His dad's helped me with this. So, and his principal and his school was in on it. So he was getting college credit for doing this show. And then, like, we had Brett Vinat interview him, and then Brett Vinat, like, School Sucks podcast guy. And all of a sudden, Nick is, like, dropping out of the school where his dad's an administrator and becoming a yak farmer. So, but he's actually, like, doing more by 6 a.m. than most students do through the entirety of high school. So it's okay that he dropped out. School was getting in his way. He's too smart for it. So that's going to become the cuss, is, yo, my yak farmer, what's up? And, you know, like, liberals and conservatives will look down their nose at us anarcho-yakitalists and call us in hushed tones, like, oh, I heard that guy's a yak farmer, man. Yeah, like, they don't really want to be heard saying it. So
This town meeting better go okay, and don't take any questions from yak farmers.
Yes.
And you know what else is going to be a great day? You say that it's going to be banned on the radio. That means some libertarian is going to get offended enough to go complain to the FCC, and that's going to be a great day for irony.
Well, that brings us back to the Cantwell article. We were talking about this article that he wrote, where he was complaining, actually, that that libertarians were too liberal, and that's why libertarianism is doomed. I mean, the article, for what it's worth, you know, he basically says that, like, the theories of libertarianism are solid, but then he said, like, it just doesn't work in reality, basically, because people are people and do what they want. And I just hate that he takes it to collectivism and the worst form of collectivism available today, which is Trump. But I can kind of put on my minarchist hat and see what he's saying, like I was saying before. And I can almost even see the, like, well, maybe we shouldn't let all these people, although just saying we shouldn't let these people in is like,
yeah,
incredibly unlibertarian statist collectivist. We is not a word we libertarians can really use with good conscience. But I mean, here's the thing, like, I am not bending over backwards to defend Muslims as a fragile group. That sounds ridiculous to me. And basically, the more I hear lately, the more I just want to, like, make fun of Islam and make fun of Christianity and make fun of Judaism and whatever your religion is. I'm basically a deist, which means I believe in God, but I kind of think God created everything and then stepped away and is just letting it wind down. Or do what it does, and that, you know, God created it and it's just physics and chaos after that. And I really believe that, but I'm not an atheist. I'm not an agnostic, but I'm really starting to feel like one of those atheists when I just hear, you know, I hear people murdering in the name of Islam. I hear how homophobic a lot of Muslims are, and see, like, videos of them throwing guys off a 10-story building for being gay and killing them while a crowd cheers. And, like, you know, and then hearing people say, well, that's only a really small majority of them. And I'm like, really? You ever seen, you know, when they're questioned, like, what the percentages are? Muslims in nearly a majority, if not a majority of Muslims in the world do really don't like gays, and they really don't like a lot of things that we consider freedoms in America, you know? And, so I don't have this desire to defend them like they're frail, but I also just, I'm so sick of Christians right now. I don't want to collectivize them though, but it's like, I've heard so many Christians lately, like, kill, like, who want to kill in the name of Christ, and who want to do things that are so unlike what Jesus taught that it just, I'm hating religion these days. How about you, Steve? You believe in God, right?
People ought to people ought to just listen to the Bad Quaker podcast and call it at that.
They really should.
You know, yeah.
Although, here's the thing, like, Bad Quaker, Ben Stone is a really dear friend of mine, and he's going through a bad scene right now. He basically had to give up doing radio because he has this thing called Lewy body dementia, which is, like, related to Parkinson's. It's the same thing that Robin Williams had, which is, like, probably the reason Robin Williams killed himself. Everyone should go listen to them on YouTube, to the Mark Maron podcast interview with Robin Williams. It's mind blowing. And, like, he alludes in it to, like, having contemplated suicide. He's kind of funny about it. You know, Maron's like, did you ever go as far as to buy a gun? And he's like, nah, I was thinking more like, you know, erosion, using my water pick to slowly slash my wrist over time. But, you know, Parkinson's and Lewy body dementia are so devastating. There's no cure for it. There's little treatment for it. And basically what happens is, over a period of months, years, or decades, you just become so annoying and, like, burdensome to talk to your family that you're just ruining their life. I think Robin Williams, I don't think he killed himself out of depression. I think he killed himself because he wanted to spare his family, like, watching 10 more years of that. You know?
I never gave you my theory on Robin Williams, did I?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, my theory is that Robin Williams didn't kill himself because of Lewy body. Robin Williams didn't kill himself because of dementia. Robin Williams didn't kill himself because he was depressed. The reason Robin Williams killed himself is because he read the script to Mrs. Doubtfire 2 and knew his financial troubles and knew that he had to save the world from this movie ever being made.
Is this a thing? Is there really?
There was only,
this is a thing?
No, this is my personal theory.
Right. Was there a Mrs. Doubtfire too, and was he in financial trouble?
Yes.
Is what I'm saying.
He was in financial he was in really bad financial trouble, which is why he was back on TV. You remember right before he killed himself, he had that show that was on for about a season on ABC. And yeah, he was on TV, which he never wanted to do. And he was going through a lot of hard times. He'd lost a house or something. And yeah, he was, I mean, and that's not an uncommon thing for Hollywood celebrities to go and lose a you know, whole bunch of money. They're not financial wizards. And
that's why it's kind of surprising that Marin like has a modest house after all he's been through, like in LA, that like, you know, it's probably worth $1 million, but it's not a mansion, but he's got a house that he owns outright, which is, it's kind of, that's making it. You have a house that you own outright, but it's not in LA.
Sitting in it right now. It's in glamorous North Philly. Who needs Hollywood?
Yeah, we had to like, we were worried when we were starting the show because there was so much noise outside because the gangbangers were having a someone just got out of prison party. I thought it was your roommates. And I said, we're doing a show, man. Tell those guys to shut up. And you're like, if I lean out the window and tell those guys to shut up, they're going to come in and kick my door in and kill me. So we didn't, you didn't do it. But yeah, man. So Robin Williams, he's a funny guy. You know, his death really reminded me how stupid people are, because you know what they did? They went in San Francisco and put flowers in front of the house where Mrs. Doubtfire was filmed. Like, no, that's not his house, man. Go away. You're stupid. People are dumb.
Have you ever seen the YouTube video of Mrs. Doubtfire recut as a horror clip?
No, it sounds funny though.
You need to put it in the show notes for this episode. It's really, really funny.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
All right.
Because it basically plays like a horror movie, Mrs. Doubtfire. Here's somebody, it's a woman who just happens to have the same build as your husband, who by the way is totally unreachable at the times when she's around, which is never explored. And and then he goes and he looks creepy as all get out. They do basically
not as
face
much as
off.
John Lithgow though as the football playing crossdresser in
I fail to see much of a difference.
It is kind of the same guy, really.
Between Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah. Robin Williams is amazing.
There's also not,
but that movie is really stupid. And that movie's like every every screenwriting manual like lists that as something you should study as a script. And I'm like, yeah, if you want to make that kind of crap, but you know, he transcended it. He was great. I really liked him a lot. I kind of cried listening to that podcast with him, man. It was tough, but so I want to talk about this. I want to talk about something that's never going to make me cry. It's only ever going to make me laugh, which is Chris Cantwell. This guy, this ex-libertarian who's now a self-described fascist and lover of Trump. He thinks Trump is going to save America. So he wrote this article, and he kind of conflated two concepts in a cool way. One is RK selection theory, which is a biological theory that there's two kinds of mammals or two kinds of animals, basically. Like, R selected basically have a ton of offspring. They're all expendable. They sexually mature really young and make more and just live like there's no gratification to delay. They just want instant satisfaction. And, you know, it doesn't – like rabbits and rats – are examples, you know, and
please donate,
and cats in the wild, like, you know, they just have, you know, 60 offspring a year, and you know, 50 of them die and 10 of them live, and they just munch on endless fields of green, and occasionally an owl picks one of them out, but the rest don't even notice what happened. So that's the R selected. K selected are like wolves and humans. It's ones that sexually mature later, they do more parenting, they have less offspring, they care more about defending their offspring, and they're willing to die for their territory. And then Cantwell basically says liberals are R selected, and conservatives and libertarians are K selected. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Freedom Fiends. Yeah, we're talking about, me and Steve Miller here, we're talking about an article by Chris Cantwell called Why Libertarians Are Hopeless. That basically compares liberals. This is why libertarians are hopeless, is the name of this article. And it basically says that liberals are like our selected beasts, which means they sexually mature young. They have no care for their offspring. They don't do much parenting. They have lots of offspring, and they teach their offspring by example to live as if everything's an unlimited resource. I can kind of see that kind of works, kind of makes sense. And then he says that conservatives and libertarians are like K-selected animals, which basically means, you know, they take more care. They have less offspring, have them later. They can delay gratification. They are pickier in their environment. They build up, you know, a territory, and they will defend their territory to the death. But he says that libertarians are hopeless because they have too many liberal ideas. Basically, they have too many R-selected ideas that lead them to be their own worst enemy. You know, things like, hey, there should be unlimited immigration. So that's part of the article. And then the rest goes into the three-brain theory. And the three-brain theory is, I'll talk about that in a minute. It's been discredited, but he uses it. So what did you say about the article, Steve? Miller? Yeah.
I can't believe. Okay, so that's something that exists in nature that you can't base a political philosophy off of that. That I don't see much difference between saying between that and saying, hey, there's both, you know, there's tundra and taiga in nature. Yeah. You have these really cold places, and then you've got these places that are, you know, more moderate climates.
Writers like similes. It's lazy but clever, you know. And I mean, I think Cantwell would probably say, hey, look out your window at those gangbangers that are, you know, encroaching on your property that'll kill you if you tell them to shut up, wouldn't he? And what would you say to that? That they're not our selected?
That Cantwell can come over here and treat them like they're meter maids and clip them off one by one if he's so certain that if he's such a K-selected mammal that he can come over.
It's not his property, though. He wouldn't need to defend it. He talks like he would defend his property like that. He says he just bought an AK-47 in an article that had one of the funniest lines I've ever heard. Was he said, until now, my gun selection has been very limited for a revolutionary. And I'm like, really? You said those words came out of your mouth. You're out of your pen. You're typing. You're calling yourself a revolutionary. That guy reminds me of the FBI plant radio host, Hal Finley, I think it was Hal something, who said, you know, I don't build bombs, I build bombers. Like, basically, he wants to encourage other people to do it, but he'd never do it. He's no revolutionary, man. That's a did act, is what that is. So
I don't build bad gun habits. I build bad gun habits and articles about how beater baits deserve death.
Yeah, he has written those articles.
Yeah. Yep. Meter maids, folks. Yep. Meter maids and postmen. They're the first ones to go because they're on the front lines of the state.
They're so not. I like mailmen. All right, so Hal Finley is not the guy's name. It was somebody else. It was Hal somebody. I can't remember.
One of them was a time traveler. There was some time traveler that was popular back in like the 60s or so that had a very, very similar name to us. I was performing at a UFO convention like 3 years ago. They paid me $100, God bless them, to perform for these folks at this UFO convention. And the dude was late. The headliner, Kate, showed up late. And I'm like, you're a time traveler. How are you late?
Hal Turner. Yeah, that is funny. Hal Turner is the guy's name. And did I say FCC plant? I meant FBI plant. That's pretty funny. I don't even know if there are FCC plants.
That'd be funny if they had an FCC plant. I think they go around cursing on shows.
Yeah. He never cursed, though. It was Mark that cursed. It was the guy that like runs the money on Free Talk Live, the one that has the most to lose, that almost tank them by saying 5 F-bombs in 10 seconds and storming out. Have you seen that video? It's awesome.
No, never have. Throw it in the show notes.
Yep. Yeah, so you don't buy the liberals are selected and conservatives and libertarians are K-selected beasts theory?
No, that's dumb because it's the same species.
Right.
And that's, see, here's the problem. That only works if you presuppose that people who don't agree with you politically are subhuman, which it I really can definitely does. See really him believing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of a discredited theory, too, because there are no animals that only have one side of it. They all have some parts of the other side, which is also the problem with the three brain theory. But, and actually the R and K are old in German and the K stands for clout or something in German. So it's probably Nazi philosophy in some way or connected.
I live in a city that's dominated by Democrats where everybody is a liberal, where in pretty much any room I walk into, I can pretty much guarantee you that I'm the most conservative person there.
Yeah, I like your trophy mug.
Now I get called a liberal because I don't believe that you can judge someone's intelligence by their race alone.
Yeah.
Weird. Weird times to be living in.
What a time to be alive, man. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Yeah. All right. Stop
right there. Hey, there's some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you ones listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yeah. This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting through 10 billion watts of power into your central cortex. Into all three of your brains. That would be your lizard brain, your dog brain, and your human brain. And we're talking about Chris Cantwell and everything that's wrong about him. It's common theme on the Freedom Fiends. He never replies. He's a perfect target because he never replies. Because if he replied, it'd be fine too. But it's like he feels if he ever replies, he is giving us traffic. You know, like he'll never post the Freedom Fiends did blah 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 and link us or even not link us. He'll say some show. He'll occasionally be like some show that I won't name, but he doesn't even want to do that because he thinks people might figure it out and might visit our site. The only thing he's had in the past couple of years, one was, I've been dealing with a lot of health issues. He tweeted directly to me, something like, hurry up and die. That was it. He's done that a couple of times, but we like him. We like talking about him here on the Freedom Fiends. Do you, Miller?
It's good for traffic because we get those legions of fans that he's hoping will otherwise just go outside. But
well, there's the theory. There's the theory too that he gave up being a libertarian and became a conservative because he'd realized he doesn't get a lot of donations from libertarians. Like they don't have as much money and there aren't nearly as many of them as there are conservatives. So I think he did. That's possible.
I think Chris Cantwell is a liar, a fascist, and his neck beard stinks.
Yeah, there you go. So the other part of this article that he wrote about libertarians are hopeless is about the three brain theory, which I want to talk about a little bit, which you will probably equally dismiss as, you know, like really it's everything is kind of a continuous, everything with mammals and especially with humans is a continuous spectrum. Really, there's, you can't put people in that kind of boxes, especially with this kind of stuff. But, you know, again, to kind of play devil's advocate for what he's saying, like we were talking about Ben Stone for a minute, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, like taught me, I used to buy the, I'm going to be a revolutionary. I was reading, you know, Boston Tea Party, and I still like his writing, but I was reading all this gun stuff. I was getting guns, and you know, this is before I lost all my guns in a voting accident. I don't like to say what guns I have. I think people register their guns now by bragging about them on the internet. I think Cantwell recently set himself up for gun confiscation by talking about this AK-47 he just bought. But Ben Stone has been a really important guy in my life. He taught me, and basically in every episode he's ever done, he's discussed this idea of like, you know, that, that you're not gonna change anything by dying in a Ruby Ridge style shootout with the government, and that the idea of trying to meet the government on their own terms, which is the terms of force and aggression, is first of all you're gonna die and it's gonna ruin the life of everyone around you. You know, second of all, it's not going to change anything. And it's like Cantwell has written tons of articles about how if enough people do this, it'll change things, and Ben Stone has given just amazingly stellar, common, reasoned arguments for why it won't over and over and over. And it kind of brought me to part of where I am, but I'm not a puss-puss and Ben's not a puss-puss. And, you know, Cantwell thinks that people who aren't willing to shoot their postman right now are puss-pusses. And he's just wrong, man. The guy's just an angry, bitter, plump, almost middle-aged guy who has been trying to make a name for himself in everything for 10 or 20 years and hasn't gotten much traction and kind of got a little bit of traction in libertarianism, but had his 15 bites of fame. I mean, it was like there was a time when everything he wrote about on his blog had like, you know, 85 or 185 comments. And over the couple of years and like, you know, before he went full on cuck conservative, it was getting down to like 4 or 5 comments. Like he'd lost his audience. And then he reinvented himself as this Trump loving, you know, white pride fascist. And all of a sudden he's getting like 65 and 85 comments on each post, you know, again, like 20 or 30 of them are the same guy arguing with him or agreeing with him. But, you know, he's got a following now, a new following. And Molyneux did the same thing. Did you notice that? Like Molyneux isn't even a libertarian anymore. Like Molyneux is a libertarian who says, well, it's okay if the cops choke you because you're selling unlicensed cigarettes. Like what part, how can anyone who's ever thought they believed in liberty still like that after that? But you know, Ben Stone never sounded like a puss-puss when he said that kind of stuff, but kind of sometimes the answer without the violent revolution is usually kind of like, well, you know, you just watch the state collapse on its own. And Ben has made it clear, like, if that happens, it's not going to happen pleasantly. It's not going to, you know, all the people who still have a government job with good benefits building the roads aren't going and you know, shooting the potheads aren't going to pleasantly step aside and say, oh, it's libbear now, it's libertarian paradise, I'll just go get a real job. No, those people would blow up the roads, and they have access to dynamite. They would blow up the roads before they would calmly step aside. Those people would shoot everybody and be in their armored Bearcats doing it before they'd ever say, well, we don't need a war on drugs and we need to just, you know, can protect private property and personal rights, not aggress on people. The state is not going to give up pleasantly. So the idea, I think a lot of libertarians haven't really thought it through, should probably own guns just in case, you know, for defensive purposes, should not have fantasies of dying in a blaze of glory, but should realize like this isn't just going to pleasantly go away, and saying it will is magical thinking. It is hippie thinking. It is leftist thinking. It is wrong thinking. I don't really know what the answer is, but it's not the violent revolution. And it's also not just the, you know, run my agorist, you know, tea company out of my bedroom and the government will collapse. So what do you think of all that? What do you think of the, like, do you even care? I mean, it's like, I saw this great episode with Marin, with Sam Cedar, who's a really political guy that he used to do a show with. And Sam Cedar's like, why aren't you political, Mark? And Mark's like, I don't, kind of this answer of like, you know, I can't even save myself. How am I going to save the world? Which I kind of agree with. I kind of agree with, like, you have to deal with, I deal with the personal more than I deal with the political all the time. You know, how do you feel? Or do you even care? Are you Marin or Cedar or
it's both
or what? Yeah, it is both.
It's definitely both. Well, first of all, I can attest that I used to, back in my liberal days, I used to listen to Mark Maron's show because he would come on in the morning. Yeah, with Cedar. And he had a black guy with him for a while. And I don't remember that guy's name, but he'd been on the radio for forever. And when that guy came on, the show got a little worse. But when he was with Cedar, it was okay. But Sam Cedar's a total cuck. And he's definitely the sort of activist who he's the if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention kind of activist that I've never
he's
believed.
He's kind
that.
Of like the liberal Rush Limbaugh, isn't he?
Yeah, 100%. Or Randy Rhodes too. There's a woman named Randy Rhodes.
He stole her name from a heavy metal guitar player. Ozzy's guitar player.
Stole her name from a heavy metal guitar Literally, player, but did do that. A really good George W. Bush impression. She did a really good Bush impression.
Okay.
But that being said, he was always, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. Well, maybe if you're not outraged, you're just not paying attention to the things activists want you to pay attention to. Maybe you have other things that are totally valid to pay attention to that don't result in outrage. And maybe that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's a revolutionary thought in my mind, that you don't have to walk around, you know, totally enraged at the state and, you know, or at whoever, or, you know, imagine political enemies that you're never going to meet.
I noticed that you don't like to mix business and pleasure, kind of like you won't post your Freedom Fiends episodes on your Facebook page where, like, I think you're afraid of becoming known as a libertarian comic. Is that it?
That's a little part of it. And the other part is that, I think the people that would be interested in it are already going to have access to it in other ways.
Yeah.
And secondly, I hate when comedians are constantly like spamming, like, here's something I did. Here's something I did. Here's something I did.
The only good libertarian comic anyway is Doug Stanhope. I mean, not that you're not, but like of the big guys, like, he's the only one that really like nails it without sounding like he's preaching to me.
I consider myself to be a yak farmer more than anything. If I had to put up a specific label.
Anarcho-yakitalist, man. It's, you know, I'm going to start using that because to honor young Nick and how far he's come in a couple of years and how, and I feel like a part of that, and I can actually take some ownership in that and feel good about it. I mean, I just did an interview with him the other day where he was praising my input on that. So it's not in my head. I can be humble and still say it because he says it, but it's like, it's such a great phrase, anarcho-yakitalist, you know, and I'm so sick of, like, you know, explaining, well, I'm an anarchist, but I don't blow things up and I don't break windows on Starbucks, but I'm an anarchist, but I'm a voluntarist, but voluntarist people think you work for Habitat for Humanity. Anarchist people think you blow stuff up. Anarcho-capitalist sounds like the worst two things in the world to at least half the world. And libertarian sounds like some guy at a party meeting trying to get 3% of the vote, you know? So those all have problems. I think we should all just make an effort. We should all make an effort to just say anarcho-yakitalist all the time.
I was at the Libertarian Christmas party here in the Philadelphia area last week, and it was fun, but, there was this bumper sticker that said "Discover Voluntarism," and I thought, man, somebody is going to be really disappointed when they think that is a tourism bumper sticker, and they're like, "All right, maybe I will take my family on a nice vacation to
voluntarism." I've seen Google voluntarism, but yeah, voluntarism has like a weird outreach team. You know, their squad goals are interesting, and that's one of them. Yeah, it sounds like a destination wedding, but in like Sarasota or something.
I'm suspicious of the squad goals of any group of people that doesn't include getting someone on the Artist for Bernie page. Ours includes that, and also includes the insertion of the slur yak farmer into the popular political lexicon. So we got squad goals established. And when I met Jim Babb at Occupy Philly, one of the established squad goals there was that they were going to permanently eliminate all debt. Yeah, so I guess
that's
we're
the
also-
goal. You know, that's actually the goal. That's the MacGuffin. You know what a MacGuffin is, right? It's a movie plot that, like, the thing doesn't really matter. Like, the briefcase in Pulp Fiction is a MacGuffin. The MacGuffin in Fight Club is eliminating the debt. It's also with bombs, and it's also the MacGuffin, the goal, MacGuffin goal in Mr. Robot. Have you seen that show? And they do it with computers instead of bombs. But it's a great, really dark, weird, kind of funny show that I like a lot. It's got some young hacker dude, and his dad is played by, well, it's kind of a spoiler alert. His dad is played by Christian Slater. All right. Because you don't know it's his dad.
You don't know it's his dad. Spoiler I was going to be like, what? They don't say Christian Slater's in it? But then I realized, yeah.
He's still working? Yeah. All right, we'll be back for the thrilling conclusion of the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the market.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Anytime you want buttons, Steve Miller, you just let me know. Because you give them the right people. Did you give one to Josie Wales?
I did give one to Josie Wales.
Which one?
Josie Wales got one. Mike Salvi.
State speech.
Josie.
What'd she get? State speech is hate speech?
State speech is hate speech was already taken by the first dude I offered.
It's always taken.
The first dude I offered a button to. Yeah, that was the first one taken. No, Mike Randazzo. Huge fan of the Freedom Fiends, good. Mike Randazzo. He got the BIPCOT one. He wanted the BIPCOT one, and I gave it to him.
Cool.
Nikki Allen Poe, marijuana activist who had me blocked on Facebook for 6 months for making him look bad via memes in front of politicians. He took a swaggity swag one.
Swaggity swag. What's that? Guns and Weed. The guns.
Yeah. I gave him a guns.
Swaggity swag. You couldn't remember it, or you thought it wasn't radio friendly?
No, swaggity swag is in like the drug term meaning low quality.
Oh, which one's low quality?
The one that just says gunsandweed.com.
Well, you know, that's it's an AK-47 silhouetted over marijuana leaf. And you can get buttons at Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com, click on the link that says buttons. But it's an image that's actually, I've only ever seen it one place, and I was copying it in my mind, and I couldn't remember where it was from. It was actually from Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman. There's a picture in there, a grainy picture of some commie hippie rally in the 60s, and there's someone waving a flag that's just, all it is an AK over a pot leaf. And I remember being 12 and reading Steal This Book and going, that's so cool. Like, I'd never been out of my
That's parents. The road to freedom.
That's the road to freedom. I hated guns, but I was just like, at the time, but I liked weed. And now I love guns and don't smoke weed, but I'm all for legalizing everything. Up to and including murder. No, I'm kidding. There's a Gigi Allen. Gigi Allen used to say legalize murder. It's horrible. But it's funny. And like I say, I think he's the best comedian ever from New Hampshire. And I really hate, like, conflict comedians, I call them. You know, the ones that, like, you know, they'd rather get everyone in a room hating them than bore them. And they don't know how to make them laugh. But they don't. Yep. You're not really making someone think when they want to just run you out of the room on a rail, you know, do an edge humor. But Gigi Allen was kind of the ultimate edge, you know, edge comic, confrontational comic. I mean, he was arrested for raping people at his shows in the audience. That's pretty confrontational. And I'm not saying rape is funny, but rape jokes can be funny. But that is pretty. That guy, would you agree that he is one of the most controversial and in your face comics to ever come out of New Hampshire?
Yeah, only because, I mean, I can't name three other comics from New Hampshire. I mean, there's him, there's Chris Friedman, and then there's this dude, Dwight, that I performed
Allen,
with once.
Gigi Allen is a musician. He's not really a comedian, but he's pretty funny, and he was pretty interesting. You know that.
I've seen the legalized murder bumper sticker. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a weird to have as a bumper sticker. Like, that would get you pulled over and maybe shot. So I want to talk for 10 seconds about the lizard brain theory.
And then the people would get away with it, thus proving the license plate correct. Cops, you know, you got what you wanted.
Yeah, yeah. So the three brain theory is this, like, thought experiment for explaining, like, the evolution of humans. So basically, like, you have three brains stacked on top of each other. Cantwell loves this thing. It's been disproven. It's not accurate. But it's basically like you have the lizard brain, which evolved first, which controls, you know, respiration, digestion, and like not being too hot or too cold, like just what lizards deal with. And then you've got the dog brain, which controls like emotions, dealing with getting food and building shelter and having community. And then you've got the human brain, which deals with, you know, higher thought, language, art, science, advanced things that animals can't do, but language. But the thing is, like, there's no animal that only has one of them. There's like birds that use language and build tools. And what's your question?
Which yoga teacher came up with this theory?
Yeah, it does sound like that. It really does.
It sounds like the kind of thing they talk about in a yoga class. Yeah. And you honor all three. And, you know, yoga means union. And we're just here to make all three one. Yep. Totally something they'd say.
Man, way to just cut down something Cantwell likes by calling it a yoga concept. I like it. We'll be back tomorrow with, there's always more fiends in the pipe. It's kind of like the alimentary canal of an infant, as Reagan said. Of government.
Fulton would be so proud.
Yeah. Insatiable appetite at one end and no control at the other. That's the Freedom Fiends pipeline. Yeah. Reagan talked like an anarchist, but he wasn't. He said the worst sentence in English language is, "We're from the government and we're here to help you." But then he expanded government and added taxes and gun laws. So there you go. That's conservatism for you. You don't need kings. You don't need queens, man. You don't need any divine right of rulership. Rule yourself. It's Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Worms.
Well, that sounds kind of hippie, but I believe it. So there.
Well, the important thing is that you said something that you believe in your heart, but you said it with swelling music playing behind you. And yeah, that is what ultimately matters.
It sounds like it sounds like the music that would play during the end credits of a good movie. Which is why I wrote it like
that. Yep, similar like to how Obama used to always have that one hippie nodding behind him every time he would give his speech in here. You always have that like one white hippie, like really risking whiplash, just like standing there nodding so hard, trying to prove how acceptable.